Very few politicians let go of their day jobs once they're elected in Georgia. 41 states rely on a part-time legislature. Georgia is one of them. And that means elected officials convene for portions of the year to govern, and then they go back to work as lawyers and accountants and realtors and other things. A recent article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reveals some questionable connections between the careers of part-time legislators and the laws they pass. Political reporter Aaron Goldscheinen co-authored that article, and he joins us yet again. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning.
What are the laws that restrict conflict of interest in Georgia?
Well, they're very limited, which is part of the problem that a lot of people find. It's essentially that unless something directly benefits you, as in Celeste, they write a bill that says Celeste is going to get money for this bill, then you vote for it. That's a conflict. If it just says all radio reporters will get a raise, then that's typically not considered a conflict. So it's very ambiguous and vague.
And give me some examples of how this has come up. I know that last year there was quite a bit of talk about Representative Mike Glanton of Jonesboro. What happened in that case?
Well, nothing. I mean, because it was found that that case also did not violate that direct connection between their official duties and their professional duties. What Mike Glanton was doing, we had found that he had used his official state letterhead to write a letter to the new superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools offering his assistance in some things that he does professionally. The only thing that led to was the House Ethics Committee chairman sending a letter to all House members reminding them not to use their professional, their legislative materials for a professional gain. So it's very loose.
He was trying to, it sounds like he was trying to protect a contract worth more than $1 million that benefited a company that he leads. And there was a portion of his letter that almost sounded a little bit like a threat.
I think you could, as they say in the legislature, each member will have to make that decision for themselves. But, I mean, it was one of those cases that we wrote about where it seems pretty stark that a member was benefiting from their legislative duties, benefiting professionally in their private life from their legislative duties.
So let's take another case that has been covered, and that's Renee Unterman. What is the possible conflict in her case?
Well, she is a very powerful member. She's the chairwoman of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, and she also works for a company called Anthem, which is one of the largest health care insurance providers in the country, and that has $8 billion state contract.
Yeah, it's over $7 billion, yeah.
Right. So, while she was not involved in awarding that contract, she has great power over to oversee the state agency that did.
Okay. So, and yet, as you say, there is absolutely nothing in the laws that prevents either of those two cases or makes them against the regulations.
That's correct. And, a lot of people have consternation about that, but until the legislature is willing to address it, then it's going to stay that way. But as you mentioned in the open, with a part-time legislature, it's really difficult to write a law that would cover all these instances. Because if you go down that line, you can't have lawyers voting on bills dealing with the judiciary or tort reform, for an example, then you're going to start losing, institutional knowledge, experts on the cases. I'm not sure where you get to the end of it that you can write a law that would cover everything that you would need to cover.
And let's give one more example, and it's the example that you started with in your piece in terms of how much latitude legislators have when they write bills. Explain exactly what this bill that Representative Shaw Blackmun presented, what that did.
Sure. So Representative Blackmun, he introduced a bill that would set a minimum commission for health insurance agents. What it would do is say if I'm a health insurance agent and I sell a small group policy, which is a policy to a small business, basically, then I would get a minimum of 5% commission from the health insurance company. There was some concern from some insurance agents that after the Affordable Care Act passed that insurance companies were lowering further down the commissions they were paying to make up for the cost of the Affordable Care Act. So this would set that minimum commission. Now, the issue was that Representative Blackmun was doing this on behalf of Representative John Meadows, who's the House Rules Committee chairman, which is probably the second most powerful position in the House. And Representative Meadows, who is the second signer of the bill, sells health insurance. So you have an instance where
he would get that commission.
He would get that minimum 5% commission. That's correct. But so would every other insurance agent in the House and the Senate in the state of Georgia. So we saw that as questionable because you have this very powerful member advocating on behalf of a bill that would directly benefit his business. But again, because of the looseness of the state's conflict of interest laws, unless that bill was written to say John Meadows gets a 5% commission, it would not be considered a conflict.
Yeah, it can't even be just a John. It has to be John Meadows specifically, right?
Correct, right.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with AJC reporter Aaron Gold-Scheinen about possible conflicts of interest in the state legislature in Georgia. And Aaron, this is kind of a pattern. Every single time an independent research organization studies corruption and transparency laws and other things like that, for example, the Center for Public Integrity gave Georgia a D- on our integrity. Data Lab at 538 shows Georgia has the least stringent anti-corruption laws in the nation. Is conflict of interest considered to be part of integrity and corruption?
Absolutely. I think both those organizations take into account the looseness of our conflicts of interest laws when they're awarding those grades. They have made some changes in the last couple of years to try and make some things better in terms of transparency, especially when it comes to the disclosures that lobbyists have to file to show the spending on lawmakers during the session. They require now that members file a campaign finance report in late January to show how much money they raised leading up to the session from special interests. So those are two positives that have happened in the last couple of years, but the conflict of interest laws are still a point of contention for a lot of people.
How many times do House members actually recuse themselves?
Not as often as you might think. It happens maybe a couple dozen times during the course of a session in the House. Much fewer in the Senate because there's only 56 members in the Senate compared to 180, so the numbers sort of work out. There's one member in particular in the House, Representative Mike Chokas from down in Americus, who runs a liquor store down there, and so he's taken to recusing himself from any vote in the House that deals with alcohol laws, whether it would affect retail sales or not, just to be extra careful. And he does it so often that it's actually become called the Chokas rule, unofficially. If you took Representative Chokas out of the mix, the numbers in the House would drop a lot more.
Because he actually ends up, because he recuses himself from anything dealing with liquor sales, that's actually a fair number of bills.
It is, every year. Whether it's, minor or major, there always are bills dealing with alcohol laws.
So who is concerned about this? Anyone in the legislature? Is this a topic of conversation among the legislature or just among watchdogs?
I would tend to think that there's probably at least a handful of people in the legislature who are concerned about it. But again, I think they view it as the fact that they are part-time lawmakers, and you've got lawyers packed on the Judiciary Committee, you've got farmers and agricultural folks packed onto the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, and on and on. I don't think that they see it as much of a problem as maybe the general public does, which might tell you all you need to know about the situation in the first place.
I want to quote from this study that the Data Lab at 538 did. They said the results of their study showed, quote, Georgia had some of the laxest ethics rules in the country and lacked a strong ethics enforcement agency to enforce the laws on the books. But in order to change that, Aaron, as I understand it, it would have to be the legislature themselves that would change those laws.
Well, that's absolutely right. I wonder if the folks at 538 wrote that before or after the State Ethics Commission has been sort of revamped to the point where they seem to be
doing— That was before.
Yeah. So they seem to have righted that ship to a degree and are actually doing the work of the agency of investigating cases and complaints and auditing reports that lawmakers file and stuff like that. But even then, the commission's power is fairly limited. It's not typically really an ethics agency as much as it is an auditing agency. They don't deal with conflicts of interest at the Ethics Commission. They deal with mostly campaign finance laws and lobbyist laws. So it's a little bit of a misnomer to still call it the State Ethics Commission, although we all do.
And we only have about a minute left, but
sure.
Because it's not against the rules, we don't even have an accurate count, really, of things that legislators may have voted on that could possibly have been conflicts of interest.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. I mean, we don't know necessarily what all their private businesses are because they don't necessarily have to disclose all of that. So it's nearly impossible to compile a chart of sorts that would show each member's financial interest and whether or not they've ever voted on or against the bill that would affect them.
Which would mean we probably won't see a change anytime soon.
I would think that's correct.
Aaron Goldshine, and bring in the joy. He's a political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Aaron, thanks so much.
Thank you.